The Money Show. Personal finance.
Warren Ingram from Galileo Capital. He's a financial advisor. He's a director at Galileo Capital. You're talking a fiction tonight. You're talking about a world where parents have money to leave their kids.
It still exists.
There must be 12 people in the world who can still afford to do that.
Ah, oh, come on. This is the uplifting part of the show.
Okay, all right. Now tell me in this fantasy world in which you live about these special people who, at the end of their lives, there's anything left to leave the kids.
So I think maybe it starts a little bit before the end of their lives, because it'll be parents who might just have enough, you know, when their kids are born and they look at their budget and they say to themselves, okay, we can set aside enough money to put our kids through school and university, and, you know, we can feed ourselves and look after our own retirement planning as well, but we still have a little bit of money left over to look after our kids' future as well. So it's not necessarily someone who's, you know, at age, you know, 79 and actually say they're probably a year, you know, living in a year of credit, who then wants to leave behind millions and millions. And, you know, this is just responsible parents who have a bit of a gap in their budget. And what's interesting about this kind of an exercise is they need to think, 20 to potentially 60 years ahead of where they are today. So they need to have a completely different mindset with this kind of money, as opposed to the money that they need for themselves, their retirement, and I guess even just their kids' education.
This takes a remarkable amount of planning, though. This takes a huge amount of organization. You can safely project your income over the next, say, 20 years if you're somebody who's 40 or 50 and you plan to work for another 20 years. You can safely project your income. You can safely predict what your expenses are going to be. You can safely predict how much you can put away for your retirement and be sure that that's going to be enough. And then there's this magical bit of cash left over. That's this bubble that you're talking about.
Exactly right, yeah. And I think there are a couple of things. One, it's such a long time frame away that you can't possibly try and anticipate or even try and predict everything that's going to happen. You need to start with saying to yourself, I don't even know what I don't know in a situation like this. So I need to plan cleverly, and I need to spread the money as far and as wide as possible, because that's the only way that you hope that a good portion of the money will be immune to as many unforeseen events as possible. So I think that's one important thing is you know, think beyond just your own, you know, your own kind of set of concerns and your own bubble as you know it now, and try and spread that money as far as possible. And we see some really sad examples of this, not going well. For example, in Zim, where, you know, families would say, you know, we've got a family farm. And the father who launched the farm says, on my passing, the farm goes into trust and the farm may never be sold. And we know what happened in Zim, and those families got stuck in a situation where they just can't sell an asset that the father, you know, really thought would be in the family for the next, you know, multiple generations. So this kind of money, what you need to do is protect it from one point of view. In other words, protect it so that the children don't get access to it on the day they turn 18 and they go and spend it on a nice sports car and big round the world holiday. But at the same time, don't lock it in such a way that it cannot be accessed for the right reasons in the right circumstances. And so to me, you know, a couple of things. One, you need to look at, for example, what happens with education. Let's say your children are 3, 4, 5 years old now, and you want to protect them against the future. One of those things might be, if we look at the whole fees must fall, issue last year, we don't know what form our universities are going to be in 20 years' time. And so you need to be able to say, well, you know, potentially what I need to do is start saving for my kids' education in a situation where they might need to be schooled outside of the country. You know, if universities, you know, aren't protected and don't go well, you know, where are we going to put our kids? And so that means that you might well need to start overseas investments for your children, even though they're only 2 or 3 or 4 years old. And at the same time, you know, this sort of migration of children, especially educated kids in sort of, you know, knowledge industries that might just want to move around the world. You need to say to yourself, okay, I can't just invest everything they have in South Africa, because they might need to access that money in dollars or pounds or euros or yen or the one, you know. So I think you've got to think about that as well. And then we've got to look at things like taxes. You know, one of the things that you've got to be careful of is what happens when you start investing money now for your children. If you're putting it all in your own name, and at age 25 or 30 you want to give that to the kids at that point, if it's all in your name, that means you're paying major donations taxes. So what's the most effective way to try and do some planning of tax as well?
I know,
there's a lot going on here.
Yeah, there's a huge amount going on, and there's plenty of food for thought. But I know people who look at their young children, and their young children are perfect and they're wonderful and they're so cute and bubbly and charming and they're polite and sweet. Yet they've seen so many families go wrong with leaving legacies for kids and leaving money in children's names that when the kids do turn 18 and the money becomes rightfully theirs to do with as they please, they do go off the rails. That and possibly by that point they've fallen in with a bad crowd, or they've got themselves into some kind of trouble, social trouble, whatever it might be. And suddenly this money actually becomes quite destructive in their lives. And it's that ability to relinquish control of the funds and trusting in a positive future for your kids, in which your kids take the life lessons they learn at the dinner table and apply them well, and a future where actually the money becomes a tool of self-destruction.
So I think there are two aspects to this. One will be an educational and almost social responsibility that you have as a parent, and the other is then straight sort of nuts and bolts legal technical issues. So just the legal technical issues, you know, one of the best ways to protect your kids from, I guess, potentially from themselves, would be to set up a trust for the reason that trust should be set up. You know, not a tax dodge, not a way to shaft Shaft SARS or anybody else, but it's a way to ensure an orderly transfer of capital from one generation to the next. And in a trust, you could say, right, this trust is set up for the purpose of, number one, making sure that the kids are provided for if myself and my wife pass away, but secondly, if they do pass away when the kids are only 21, 22, that they can only access the money potentially at their age 25 or 30 once they've achieved certain benchmarks, either it be in a tertiary education or they've started employment, or that they want to use the money for further education and they can't afford it, you know, that the trust then pays for that without just giving them just a major lump sum of money that they just can afford to, or can just blow without control, without restriction. So there a trust can be extremely valuable. But again, just be careful if you're the parent setting up that trust that you do it, you know, properly, so that you don't, you know, rule from the grave where you say, you know, they can never access the money in any circumstance except, you know, R1,000 a month, you know, something silly, which I have seen in trust deeds.
What?
Because, you know, 20 years' time, R1,000 a month is not.
But that is, it's lacks so much foresight. You know, you have people who make financial commitments or make financial decisions today based on thinking that it will be the same 20 years from now, and nothing could be further from the truth.
Exactly, yeah. So I think, you know, set some principles in there which are important, but then give the trustees an element of discretion to use that money in a wise way for the benefit of the children. And I think, you know, that leads then to the social part of your job as a parent, the educational part, which is, you know, don't hide money conversations from your children, you know, when they're young. You've got to expose them to sensible financial decisions, make them part of the family budgeting exercise, test them with small amounts of money in the beginning, you know, and see how they make money decisions. Help them, you know, set up investment portfolios, you know, even if it's small amounts, and get them used to the idea of thinking, you know, thinking down the line, thinking about the future and delaying the sort of instant gratification urge that we all have, and see how they deal with it. And what you find is if you make that part of the family conversation over time, that becomes something that they get used to. And then, you know, when they do get to the position where they've got to manage money, they're not spoiled by the money. They're actually, it's just part and parcel of life, and they're able to think rationally about it and make good decisions. If you're in a situation where that doesn't work, then that's where the trust is really going to be helpful.
Okay, but trusts are expensive to set up, they're expensive to administer, but your suggestion there is that they can actually offset a lifetime of heartache and potentially money wastage.
Yeah, so absolutely, and to me that, you know, it's massively valuable. But as you say, they are expensive. So what happens if you're, you know, kind of you know, the normal salary Joe that is never going to be able to afford to set up a trust and pay lawyers to do all these things. Just remember that, for example, things like your retirement fund, you can leave that to your kids. And if they're 21, they're not going to be able to access that necessarily until they're 55. So there's some clever things that you can do with retirement funds as well that will at least delay things like estate duty and executives' fees and to some extent limit your children's ability to access their money. And, you know, I keep thinking, and a lot of parents are very cleverly now setting up tax-free savings accounts for their kids when their kids are 3 or 4 or 5 years old. And what happens if you're a parent and your child is 17 and you realize that in a year's time they're going to turn 18 and have access to that money and your child has gone off the rails? You just realize that this is going to be a big issue. To me, one of the things that you could really consider, it's a desperate measure, but it's something to consider, is transfer that money into a retirement annuity for that child. Because then that they've got a long-term investment that's going to grow tax-free, but they can't access it until they're 55. And hopefully by then life is, back on track. And if not, at least that they can't access all of it. They are going to be able to have to draw pension with the bulk of the money.
They're not going to like you very much for it, but this isn't a popularity contest. This is making sensible financial decisions in the best interest of your family. Crucial. Absolutely crucial listening. Warren Ingram, thank you so much. Personal Financial Advisor, Executive Director, Galileo.